performance of Riverdance. And the man driving the big musical bus tonight down here at the Titanic Slipways is the conductor of international acclaim, Mr. David Brophy. You're very welcome.
Thanks, John.
Looking well. 10 minutes to go before show. Do you have a routine? Do you have something that you do always before you go on stage?
Every 10 minutes before every show, I have a conversation with a guy called John Toll. And even at all my concerts in Dublin, I just imagine I'm talking to John Toll. So this is exactly what this is. This is my warm up for the 10 minutes now before the show, talking to you.
And every year I say, "Have you got a routine?" And every year you don't.
I have no routine at all. My one thing, maybe I get changed as late as possible. So I have when I used to be principal conductor of the concert orchestra in Dublin, myself and James Dunn, who's their principal percussionist, we'd have a sort of a game of chicken to see who would get changed the latest. So 2 minutes to eight, we'd run down and see who would get changed the latest, you know. So I just get changed as late as possible. But this is what, and it's different tonight because I've got to get changed early because they put makeup on me and things like that, which I don't know why they bother.
You're looking well, I have to say.
I'm grand, yeah, I'm cool.
There's what, 12,000 people out here in their coats and their scarves and their blankets and all well wrapped up. You've the orchestra in their whites there just making their way from the orchestra tent onto the stage. For somebody tonight who, you know, didn't get a ticket or whatever, who's sitting at home, they're driving down the road with their kids in the car, they're kind of not that interested in classical music. What is it about tonight that's special?
Well, you see, it's not classical music. See, classical music doesn't exist. Let's just get out of it. Let's just stop straight away. Because Mozart didn't write classical music, he just wrote music. Verdi just wrote music. And then, I suppose, a couple of academics at the end of the 19th century decided to call it classical music. So it doesn't exist. Really doesn't exist. And it's just a night of music. And there's all sorts of music here tonight. I mean, I get the difference between, you know, rock and jazz and trad and so-called classical. But, you know, we're just having, I mean, it's a great atmosphere here. You can feel it straight away when you walk around. And everyone's in good form. The rain stayed off. So we're just here for a night of music, and that's all it is. No boxes. We're outside the box tonight.
Well, look, I'll let you get onto the stage because they're looking for you now. Going to let you go. Thanks for talking to us. Good
pleasure.
Luck. And are you dancing the Riverdance?
Oh, yeah, I've got my hot pants on.
Your heavy shoes. On that tasteful note, good luck, David Brophy, and all the best. That's David Brophy. Backpacks and all the rest. You can hear the fireworks going off in the background. I have to come back to Grace because we were talking. I'm just in the crowd out front. It's freezing cold. We spoke to your dad right at the beginning of the evening. You came up from Enniskillen for the concert.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Like, I thought it was sensational. There was just such a variety as well, like the gospel choir, and then there was just different singers, like there was jazz and everything. It was just so interesting, and it was just so different. It was great to watch.
And you sing with the Ulster Youth Choir.
Yeah, the training choir. I did it there this summer, and it was brilliant. I had an absolutely amazing experience with it, and I would recommend to anyone that isn't interested in singing to definitely look up the Ulster Youth Choir and see what they do.
And what about the Belfast Community Gospel Choir? Would you fancy to me, singing in that choir there with Noah Stewart singing Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen would have been just one of the highlights of your musical life.
Yeah, it was just, it was incredible to watch. Even like if I was like partaking in that would have just been like a whole different kind of experience. It would have been brilliant to have been a part of.
I have to point this out. We're standing in front of the tree at the Christmas tree at the Royal
There's
Academy of Music.
There's a bit of a theme going on.
Which has, it's a Bob the Builder themed tree. Is there any particular reason why?
I would love to know. I think I'm going to have to ask the guys in the front desk. I think they'll probably be very, I'm going to ask them.
Is there any reason, sorry, why there's a crane on
We're
top of the tree and not a, not a not a fairy?
They're putting a big crane up and they come going together because of the high winds.
Oh, right. Because of the building work that's going on.
That's obviously what
that's
I
very
like
clever.
It. I'm liking
it's brilliant.
It. That's really good.
No musical connection, but it's a nice
no
idea.
Musical connection.
Arlene Foster, were you one of the many children who played an instrument who jumped on a yellow bus every Saturday morning to board orchestra?
Well, I didn't jump on a yellow bus, but I did receive, when I passed my 11 plus, a piano. That's what I received, and I learned how to play the piano. But I also...
So what pieces can you play the piano?
Oh my goodness, not now. But I did take lessons at the time, and I also played the accordion. So there you are, there's a
Which
little insight.
Which did you prefer, the piano or the accordion?
A little insight. Well, you know what, of course it's a crossover because it was a piano accordion, so... The two were
Accordion's
there.
Accordion's very difficult, but you've a lot
they
of things
are
to kind of
but master. It's nice. And I heard an accordion band just recently, and it brought it all back to me, actually, up in Ballymena, so it was nice.
So now you're
next generation yes. are involved in the music.
Yes,
education
my daughter's
system.
In the Western. She does get the yellow bus on a Saturday morning up the Strabane for the Western Youth Orchestra, so she really enjoys that as well.
So what do you think children get out of contact with music then?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, music is so important. I mean, for me, life would be so dull without music. I always have music in the house when I'm on my own, blasting out of the stereo system.
So if you had to pick one piece for your Desert Island Discs?
It'd probably be the Hallelujah Chorus from Messiah.
In the same way then that Rodgers and Hammerstein were successful, one did the music, one did the words, Gilbert and Sullivan, Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber. No pressure on you, Barry Douglas, then, when the words have been provided by Michael Longley for you to hang beautiful music on?
Well, I think that it's the job of the composer, of course, to bring something to the table, more to reflect the beauty of and the magic of the poetry. And I think it's really important to get out that message from this place, which is can be so positive and will be so positive. So I'll do my best, and I feel very humbled in front of this task, but hopefully it'll be a winner. Maybe we'll even go to Eurovision.
Well, it couldn't be much worse than most of the things in Eurovision.
Your music lives way beyond where you do, because in countries, in cinemas, in living mm-hmm. rooms all over the world, people will respond and will remember the time they saw such and such a film, or the atmosphere that your music created in a particular scene. That's a very powerful thing.
It is a powerful thing, and I'm just beginning to come in contact with that. There was a woman in Lucerne who came up to me, and she must have been, I'm going to guess, maybe 40, in her late 30s. And she said, when I was a young girl, I saw Back to the Future, and I knew two things after seeing that movie. I wanted to be playing in an orchestra, and I wanted to play the horn. And it turns out this woman was the first horn player in the orchestra the night of the premiere of Back to the Future in concert.
Wow.
And that had this really profound effect on me. I mean, it's what you're talking about. I've been doing this long enough so that I'm having people come up to me and share stories of the effect that some of these things that I've been part of have had on their life, and it's amazing to have that coming now at this stage of my life at 65 years old.
Well, can I tell you that 2 days before Christmas Eve in 2004, maybe, when Polar Express came out, mm-hmm. it was the first film that the five of us as a family went to see. We were all kind of, you know, some had been as babies and slept through films before,
right,
but
sure.
everybody sat in their chair, everybody, and to this day, that's our favourite Christmas movie. All aboard.
On my way to my music lessons.
But you've played, I'm sure you've played in a wide variety of musical venues over the years.
Oh,
is this
sure.
the first jail you've played in?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
There'd be no concerts in Switzerland or in any of the big European jails. You haven't done a Johnny Cash. You could do an album, actually. James Galway live from Crumlin Road. There's a ring to it. Well, it worked for Johnny Cash. So for the purposes of this concert, you're playing it's the third movement of the second Mozart. And then after Music Day, what's next?
On the 1st of January 1975, Harold Wilson was the Prime Minister. Mud were top of the hit parade with Lonely This Christmas. And a loaf of bread, can you believe it, cost 16p. Meanwhile, in other news, John Bennett made history. His was the first voice to herald a new era in broadcasting here in Northern Ireland with the launch of BBC Radio Ulster. And 40 years on, you're very welcome to this extra special 40th birthday gala.
Oh, yes, John, we're joined in the Ulster Hall by listeners, presenters, and a whole cast of musicians, actors, and household names.
It's a bit like the Parish Variety Concert with better decorations. But we begin with a trip down memory lane and some well-known BBC Radio Ulster SIG tunes. See how many you can spot.
So how good are you at the piano then, David?
Well, I used to be, I can tell you exactly how good I am, because I used to be I got distinction in my grade 6 when I was 15. Hang on, then it went wrong. Then I joined a punk band, and I deliberately, as my big punk statement, refused to learn my grade 7 pieces properly. That was my big anti-establishment statement, and I failed grade 7. So work it out from that.
So you got a distinction in grade 6 and then failed grade 7?
Yeah, that was me sticking it to the man. My daughter is unbelievably musical.
She done her grade 7 yet, though?
She hasn't done her grade 7.
Has she discovered punk music yet?
She's a massive fan of early 70s music. She's a massive fan of Bowie and Lou Reed and Joni Mitchell and people like that, even though she's only 14.
So what happens when she decides to stick it to the man and go and fail her grade whatever?
I'll tell her off. That I won't have that. I'm not a punk rocker anymore, obviously. I'm 51.
Also on a musical topic, Three Lions, you were very much responsible for that, which is still reckoned to be one of the best football songs of recent years. Have you been approached looking ahead to the Euros for the summertime?
We have been approached, but we're not going to do it. We basically feel, me and Frank Skinner, that the song stands as a statement about, you know, football and England and all that kind of stuff. And it did, you know, for better or worse, it slightly killed off the football song, Three Lions, because no one's really managed to do one since then. And so we're happy with Three Lions. The only thing I thought we should do, but we haven't done it, we never got around to it, is it does have the line 30 years of hurt in it. We could have gone in and done 50. We could have just overdubbed 30 with 50, but we actually haven't done that. So people will have to do that at home, rather like they're doing the get playing thing.
I'm so lucky that my work does get performed, and it's very rarely that I write something that just gets put away in a drawer and I don't get to hear it. I mean, you hear
it. And that's
it.
So rare nowadays. So many composers struggle to get a particularly in orchestral music,
to get one piece,
and if it gets a premiere, that's great. It might never see the light of day again. Yours is performed every day of the week on radio stations, in churches, and in concert venues all over the world.
I could never have foreseen that. That I think any of us, if you talk to any composer, they'll write a piece and say, well, I expect it'll only get one performance. And it's a great mystery. Music does leap across all kinds of boundaries, and thank the good Lord that it does.
And they love you in America.
Well, I had an awful lot of my first and best opportunities in the United States. That's perfectly true. I think because they're not so worried about isms in music, that there was a sort of climate when I started in the 1960s that music had to conform to certain styles. That people who read about these things will know that serialism was big at the time, which is basically music with never a tune in sight.
People say to make music, to sing hymns, is to pray twice.
I think that goes back to St. Augustine, who said that there's a very special connection with the divine if you sing your prayers. Cantare amantis est, or something, I've got my Latin wrong, but singing is a lover's thing, said Augustine, and you learn to love God through song. I think people who sing at church know what that means, but it can be open to many, many different kind of people. There's something about the singing, especially of divine words, which opens a channel, a window in something really beautiful.
That old question of what comes first in terms of writing a piece of music, and it's the phone call, it's the commission that comes. But when you have the freedom to write something, do you look for something spiritual in the music, or does that just happen as a result of the person that you are and the...
Well, first of all, I'd never be in a position, never want to be in a position, never could be in a position of writing music I didn't want to write. Mm-hmm. It's just a physical impossibility. So everything I write I've dreamt of writing it, and I just wait till the question comes along from someone, could you write this piece? And I says, well, I've got this idea, and so on. And some of those pieces, of course, are settings of words. So in a sense, the music is shaped by the text, and a lot of the text is sacred. You know, I've written two settings of the Passion narrative, a St. John and a St. Luke so far. But music is...
for the whole evening.
How does the new piece fit into a programme like that?
Well, it's always a very, very different sound, and it's more of a contrast than a blend. But Mark's work has its very unique sound and style, and it sounds like his voice.
Describe the piece to me, the Mark Antony Turnage piece, and how it came about. Is there much to and fro in between soloist and composer and emailing of ideas back and forward?
There's been a fair amount of communication, but more before the piece began to be written. He's actually quoted some earlier works. I think he had wanted to write something for solo violin and perhaps solo cello also in the past. So I think he returned to that work. This all came about through a chance meeting of my partner, Leonard Elshenbroy, who will be playing the cello part, myself and Mark. We were all attending a prom together, and we just began discussing a lot of different repertoire, and we both expressed our admiration for his compositions. So that's how things came about.
Over the Rainbow, I remember you playing that for us here in studio, and I remember it came to the end. I remember people just looking at each other, those glances, you know, those couple of seconds of silence after someone's finished playing, and you just look at people through the glass and in the studio and you think, wow, that was really... there was something really hair on the back of the neck about it.
Yeah,
and I don't think I knew at the time how personal it was to you.
Yeah, it's a doubt. And the lyrics and that song really, really sat with me during that time in which I was just finding myself in a way. But I just love it. And the other, another track on the album which has had a real... real influence, I suppose, in getting me to come back to play a little bit solo again is the opening from Glassworks, Philip Glass.
What about that? An amazing end to a fantastic evening in the Royal Albert Hall. And with me, I have Cara Rooney, first violinist, and Sam Jordan, oboist, with the City of Belfast Youth Orchestra. How did that feel?
Absolutely incredible. I'm buzzing right now. I can hardly stand still. So much fun. There were so many people. At the end, just everyone got together. We did our couple of pieces on our own, and then everyone who'd been playing during the night just all got together and played this new piece that was written for us. And it was just so much fun.
Could you get a sense on the stage of everybody joining in with Land of Hope and Glory and the light show and all that
was
happening?
Yes, the atmosphere is incredible. I was playing and I was trying to sneak wee looks out to the audience because it was so buzzing out there and I wanted to be a part of it. Even though I was playing, I was like, I want to sing.
I was hoping, because I was watching, I was thinking, I know you have to watch your conductor and all the rest. I hope somebody just looks out and kind of takes this in, because it's a sort of a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Oh, totally. Any opportunity I had, I was looking out and totally soaking it in, trying to remember every detail, because that's an experience I will most likely never have again.
So, for instance, I can be driving along in the car. I have an idea about, you know, a song that I want to sing in the evening. I just go to my pianist and say, do you know this one? And off we go. So it's been really flexible, and I've thoroughly enjoyed this tour.
So you could have knees up Mother Brown if you fancied?
If we wanted, yeah. One of the things I was going to ask you is what kind of songs do you think would go down well there at the waterfront?
In the waterfront?
Any favourite?
Well, you're probably going to sing Danny Boy anyway, are you?
I would have thought so, yeah.
Danny Boy.
Well, won't it?
Yeah, there's some beautiful songs. What about She Moved Through the Fair? Do you know that one?
Which one?
My young love said to me, my mother won't mind.
It's kind of a
woman's perspective, but it's a lovely song.
I think I recognise the tune.
Part across the series.
That's it from the Ulster Hall. If you want to listen back to today's programme, you can check it out, bbc.co.uk/School Choir of the Year. School Choir of the Year also comes with a week off school, free chips in the canteen for life, and a homework exemption. Yes, did we not tell you that? Congratulations to everybody involved, to all our audio production team as well. It's been a wonderful, wonderful thing. And delighted to announce, and nobody knows this yet, but we are delighted to announce the School Choir of the Year, will be back for a third series in 2017. So from all of us here in the Ulster Hall, from myself and Kerry, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.